Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Xbox World podcast. This is number something.
40, I think.
Number 40.
I think
so. That's a big anniversary.
Not really.
Not really, no. But welcome. And it's a very different crew this week because Pelt's back. Rob's not here. Tim's not here. It's just me and Matt. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Matt. You might have already got that. Jack Bauer Power Hour today. This podcast is sponsored by 24 The Series Energy Drink. Be your own action hero. When the clock is ticking, revive and conquer Jack Bauer style. You can pack a lot of action into 24 hours. Every second counts.
Yeah, Matt's supping on a can of 24 Energy Drink, which people who check out our next issue will see me wielding like a weapon.
It's
in the team page.
Yeah, this is getting me through the day today. Getting groggy. So,
have you ever seen those the Jack Bauer Calorie Mate adverts from Japan?
I haven't, no.
Calorie Mate, you might know from Metal Gear Solid 4. Yeah. It's like this Japanese energy bar, I believe. So Jack Bauer is like in New York or Japan or he's in a city, and he's like running along, like chasing guys down. It's got all the 24 effects. It's got the like boop boop. But the sound, like, all that stuff, right? Yeah. Jack's running around. There's helicopters flying about. The budget's huge. It's a Japanese advert. They've always got crazy budgets. He's running around. He's chasing dudes down, running through a train. Oh, it's very exciting. And then he stops and he's like, I am beat. I need some Calorie Mate.
Calorie Mate.
And he stands there and he munches on his Calorie Mate and he loves it. And then he goes on with the action, and then a Japanese guy says something in Japanese, and it's like, Calorie Mate, Jack Bauer, boom, 24.
You never see him eating, do you? You never see him go to the toilet either.
I like to think he does that during the advert breaks, because remember, we get them unedited, because there's no way you would watch it if it had advert breaks in it, you'd be out of your mind. So you watch it on DVD or by other means, which we can't talk about.
I swear, in 20 years' time, like, it'll still be going. Obviously, Jack will be really old, so he can't do much running about.
He'll need his Calorie Mate
then. He'll need his Calorie Mate. Like, the show won't have any more budget because they'll just be living on the name alone. So it'll be like there's something across America, but he can't fly because of terrorists or whatever. So they'll be like, he sets off at like hour zero, and it'll be like 23 hours of him driving. Just a camera on Jack driving. And then the last episode, he'll get there and like save the day.
Nobody would watch that show.
I'd watch that. I'd still watch that show. I'd still watch that 24.
Nobody would watch that show.
It'd be fascinating.
No, nobody. You're shut up.
You can have him with the radio on, singing.
This is the kind of excitement you can look forward to on a two-man podcast, folks. This is a post-Cologne podcast as well, because Matt's just come back from Germany.
That's why I've got the Jack Bauer drink. I'm just recovering from a mental Gamescom.
So, how did it go, as if I don't know already?
It went all right, Mike. Thank you very much. No, it was interesting. There was a lot that we saw. There were a few things that sadly we didn't get time to see. There were a few no-shows. Bioshock 2 wasn't there at all, save for a trailer that's already been released.
I'm smelling development hell about that game.
Yeah.
I'm smelling a faint whiff of development hell. I think that the early next year would be a very optimistic release date for that game.
Maybe a bit more like August.
I think it'd be more like the August release by the first Bioshock. Yeah. Bioshock so well.
We'll see. I mean, we don't know the exact situation with the development. I do believe it's single player holding it up. When I went over to see multiplayer a few months back, that looked pretty complete, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I really think it's single player holding that up, because we've only ever seen like 10 minutes of single player footage. And they haven't released any more info.
That was a vertical slice. That wasn't like an actual chunk for the game.
No, so yeah, it should be interesting when more Bioshock material finally appears. But some good stuff. I think some of the highlights include playing Natal for the first time.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out to our readers, we had representatives playing on Natal for us, but no one from the actual team went to E3, as you know, because we're paid what, about £6.50. Day,
you get paid that much?
Yeah, that much.
Son of a bitch.
So we didn't have the budget to make it over to E3. We had to send one of our cadre of crack A-team freelancers, and they played it, flapped their arms around. So Matt actually got to play the real deal.
Yeah, got to play it. Very unprofessional of me. I forgot temporarily the name of the little breakout game. I've got it written down. So you got to play that. So when they unveiled Mattel, there was obviously that woman flailing about on the E3 stage.
Oh, she was marvelous,
trying to hit the balls. So we played that, and Ricochet, that's what it's called, and got to play a bit of Burnout as well, Burnout Paradise.
Yeah.
There's no boost in the Burnout we played, strangely.
Right.
But there have been reports, obviously, you get a boost by shaking your fist or something. There wasn't in the build that we played. It was simply standing up, arms out, stretch like a steering wheel to maneuver your car.
Like a jerk.
And
let's be honest, you can't play that game and look cool. You can't play a game like that and look good.
And put your right foot forward to accelerate, right foot back to brake, and then reverse. It worked.
Yeah.
It worked. I would never want to play that game beyond 30 seconds. Just, you know, play it for 30 seconds, say, yeah, I can play Burnout like this. I don't want to play it like this, but no. I can.
Because, yeah, a little kid would be up for it, though.
Yeah, it might be an interesting diversion for an afternoon. But, I mean, Ricochet was good fun. I'll be honest, like, they talk a lot about how there's no lag. I felt like there was. Mm. Now, whether that's down to it not being quite one-to-one, or whether perhaps more likely it's down to it being very new, and it was very hard to judge the depth of the game, to judge the distances of the ball. And it's just my reaction times went up to speed. But a few of us were struggling slightly to hit the balls. But, I mean, the tech itself is incredible. When one of the guys in our group was playing Burnout, Kodu, the guy who's in charge of the Natal project, stood next to him, started sticking out his arms like a steering wheel, waving them about, sticking his foot forward and back. And it completely ignored him because it knew who was playing the game.
Mm.
And the technology just knew to blank everybody
else
out.
And there was when a second person steps onto the thing.
Yeah, so there was no interference.
And it's got a directional mic as well, so it can pick out the voices of three or four different people talking in a room.
Yeah.
This effectively does away with your Xbox Live headset.
And
to be honest, I still wouldn't be wanting to listen to people talking through my TV screen. Anyone who actually sets their console, you know, through the TV will notice that you can't really hear them.
No, we're not fans of listening through TV. We definitely prefer the headsets. But it was also interesting how there was no pause between swapping over players. So someone would step up to the point we had a little marker on the floor. Someone would step up, play a game, then they'd step back, go sit down, and someone else would take their place, and it would automatically readjust the technology to make them player one.
Mm.
Even to the extent where when we were playing Ricochet, the little avatar on screen, it wasn't an avatar so much as a silhouette, their physical features would morph into the player playing. So when Kodu was playing, he has long hair, so you could see his hair, and like, he's quite a big guy, so it was a big guy on screen. He stepped back on the first person to then play. It was our good friend Mike from Official Xbox. So he stepped forward and he's almost got no hair. So the flowing locks had gone from the guy on screen. It was a bit skinnier and a bit shorter. So, it was very impressive stuff.
Yeah.
But I remain to be convinced as to whether Natal is going to be used for many, I'm reticent to say worthwhile projects, but many new and exciting products. The potential is there. But I think for the most part, we're going to see a lot of Wii-type games.
Mm.
It'll only be perhaps first-party studios for the first year or two really making good use of the technology.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big plus. Strangely, Games of the Show, I had this discussion with a few colleagues over there, and it's a toss-up between Brink or Mafia 2.
Mm-hmm.
Going into Gamescom, you wouldn't have thought either of those would be contenders for Game of the Show. You'd maybe think something like Alan Wake, which was good, but unfortunately it was just the E3 demo.
Yeah, did they not come to you and be like, oh yeah, man, we're really looking forward to showing you guys in Europe this demo?
That's exactly what it was.
Well, wait a second, we're not living in a bubble, you know. England might be an island, but we do have like the internet here.
They think we've been in a sealed cave for the last 5 months. So like, oh, we got something really cool to show you. We're really excited to come back over to Europe and show you guys all firsthand what's going on. It's like, yeah, we've seen this, we've written about this. Mm-hmm. So that was really disappointing. Not the demo itself. The demo was just as impressive as it was first time around, but it's an old demo.
And they're saying that game's finished now as well.
Have they said
it's finished and they're just polishing.
Okay. To be honest, it looked fairly polished when we saw it.
I'm suspicious about that, to be honest, though, because if it was finished, Microsoft would be fishing for coverage by now.
Yeah.
And they're really not. Normally, the PRs would be pushing and pushing and pushing for coverage at this point. I haven't heard anything.
No, it's still a wall of silence. Apart from that demo, you know. So they've had 5 months since that demo was first shown, and still we've seen nothing more.
Yeah.
So that was disappointing. The Microsoft stand in general, obviously there's a business center where we had a lot of behind closed doors presentations and hands on. But there was the show floor as well, where the consumers were allowed in the second day.
Oh, those jerks.
And it was crazy busy with all the kids running about in their game t-shirts.
Sure enough, like last year, when we all went to Leipzig, which was you went to a much nicer city this year.
Yeah, Cologne. Very nice city.
Yeah, well, yeah. Leipzig was not. But sure enough, you'd get you know, your show floor packed out. And someone asked me, you know, like, you know, would you recommend I as a consumer get it? Please don't crack your knuckles.
Sorry.
Pellet's sitting here cracking his knuckles in the most defensive way. It's so loud. I'm not sure if the microphone's picking it up. If you're hearing clicking on the microphone, it's his knuckles cracking. So someone said to me, oh, yeah, would you recommend that I go? Like, just as, like, someone who likes games. I was like, no, definitely not. The actual, like, hands-on time you'll get is so brief.
Yeah.
The amount of queuing you'll do is incredible.
It's a lot of queuing.
It's okay for us. I mean, because we would get access on to show floor on day one when it's completely empty.
Yep.
And we have access to all the backstage areas where you got, like, guys giving you hands-on demos, you know, just for press.
And sometimes we even get passes to skip the queues when the consumer floor is open as well.
Yeah.
Managed to do that with a couple of games. Although
I bet you felt powerful.
I was tempted just to jump queues and then just walk straight out again just to spite people in line.
Yeah.
I didn't. That would be cruel.
But no, it's definitely it's a good event for press, but I wouldn't like to be on the actual floor. It's no. Also, was it incredibly, incredibly hot when you were there?
It was. I'll tell you what the worst one was. So everyone has, like, these really impressive stands, apart from Microsoft, who show up with a few booths to play Forza 3 and Lips.
Barely turned
and
up.
It was shocking. The Microsoft presence there was absolutely
shocking. Because Sony's presence is always very good.
Sony were incredible. Like, their stands were very, very impressive. They had playable Gran Turismo 5, which they didn't even warn people about. They didn't even big it up.
Well, last year they did the same thing with Little Big Planet. Nobody expected
it.
It was just mad.
So they had, like, massive amount of show floor space. They had PSP goes to play, which I played, and I wasn't that impressed with, by the way. The shoulder buttons are really tacky. PS3 Slims all on the show floor. They had great Little Big Planet PSP stages. They had Uncharted 2 and Heavy Rain areas, which were gorgeous. Activision did a really nice job. They had an actual stage where people could go up and play Guitar Hero 5, and they had DJ booths to play DJ Hero. They had vert ramps for some skaters to come and mess around while punters were playing Tony Hawk Ride. But Brink had... Bethesda probably had the best or the classiest stand.
They always do.
They had a bunch of shipping containers in a big rectangle. And inside they had, obviously, that you walk in, it's got the floor, but all around it they've got, like, a moat.
Yeah.
There's all water around it. Now, brilliantly, throughout the day, people, because it gets dusty and sweaty and there's a lot of particles, like, and dust knocking about, they would land on this water and almost make it look like it's floor.
Just a shiny floor.
So the amount of people that fell into the water throughout the day, it was brilliant. You'd see someone walking around with a wet leg. It's like, they've just been to see Brink.
Yep.
And anyway, when we were demoed Brink.
Sweaty, right?
Well, Brink, as I said already, it was probably the game of the show. One of the two games of the shows. But we were demoed it in a shipping container, in an enclosed shipping container, with about 30 sweaty journalists.
Sweaty journals.
With obviously, you know, 360s and PCs running 12 hours a day, perhaps, because it starts early, it goes on quite late. It was disgustingly hot. It was so hot that, bear in mind, this is probably the best thing at the event.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the presentation, which lasted about half an hour, had finished, less than half the people who were there at the start remained.
Yeah.
Because they just had to leave. It was that bad.
Yeah.
So... Oh, it was ridiculous, but it was a very, very nice stand. Who else had nice stands?
Bethesda last year they built a bunker from Fallout.
Ah, that's
built,
cool.
Built a vault, and you would walk down these corridors and you see, like, these stuff pinned to the boards and stuff, like little drawings by kids and things, and you'd walk in and then it would open up into a cinema. And I mean a movie theater-sized screen with, like, probably 8 rows of seats. Okay. And you sit down and they would just play all this Fallout stuff for the punters. That was just absurd.
Activision
and also they threw a party there at the end of one of the days, which, nice. which we were invited to.
Activision had a big movie type screen for Modern Warfare 2, which was quite cool. Although there was no point going in that because it was just the E3 demo again.
Brilliant.
Who else had nice stands? EA had a nice stand. They always dish out the goods.
Let's talk about Brink anyway, because, like, you used to reckon it's one of the games of the show. To me, it looks like that stupid game with the dudes with the little pinheads and the giant bodies.
They are rather pinhead-like.
I don't get why they went with that art style. It looks absolutely hideous.
That art style reminds me almost of TimeSplitters art style. You know, that very... like, they're caricatures, yeah. they're human-like, but they're slightly odd, and you can't put your finger on why,
yeah.
apart from the pinheadness. It's just... it was extremely impressive. They... basically, obviously, you can play as the police or you can play as the rebels. For the purposes of the demo, they played as a police squad who was infiltrating a place called Container City, hence all the containers,
mm-hmm.
To find a dirty bomb. Now, they started off as a soldier, I believe it was, and there was a group of them playing out the back in another room, so they were all playing together against some, I think it was some AI enemies.
How many players on each side?
I've got it written down. Hang on, have I got it here?
Oh God, are we getting packed? We're going through his notes.
I've got so.
That's all right. It doesn't matter. No one's listening to this anyway.
Okay. I'm glad. No one's listening. I'll have to check my notes and for the feature which I'm writing later on. It was very busy on screen. There were a lot of players on screen.
So it's not like 8-on-8. It's like we're talking 16-on-16 or something. Yeah?
No, I think it was about 16 to be honest in total. Right. But just when they're all on the same screen. There's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
The really cool thing about it is the ability to, well, not change your character class on the fly because you have to go to certain waypoints to computer systems to change your characters. But you've got persistent, like, micro objectives. So your ultimate objective in this map was to find the dirty bomb at the end of it. But you pull up a little objective wheel and you've got all the different tasks you can go and complete with different XP it will award you. So you go pick a certain task, like... create a shortcut here so you can mates can come back from their spawn point quicker or fix this crane so you can move this crate and block off an enemy route. And you go off and each one lasts about maybe 5 minutes. So you've got this relatively simple task that you're going to extend to about an hour just by mucking about in this world and doing all these various
tasks.
So
a single game online against other people is going to last an hour?
Not necessarily. I'm just saying for this particular... map. I mean, you can obviously change the
because they do know no one's going to play that game, right?
People are going to play it, I think.
Not if you have to take an hour. No one's going
to
play
no,
that.
No, you don't have to, but there are options you can set if you want to have a long
yeah,
game.
Right.
You can obviously do every single
sub-objective. Maybe people will go in with the best of intentions and say, oh, I'll play this for an hour, but the group of people you start playing with are not going to be the group of people you finish with, you know?
Maybe you just play it through... all on one side and just play it through like a campaign mode rather than
so
a
how does the campaign work?
Well, they obviously won't go into too many details, sadly for that. So they just restricted the demo to this one particular level.
Because if it has a campaign in inverted commas, yep. like Quake Wars, again, no one's going to buy that game.
Ah, but the...
It doesn't matter how good a deathmatch you've got. If you had Call of Duty 4's deathmatch... and you sold it, people would buy it because they know what Call of Duty is. If you had Brink's deathmatch, no one would buy it.
I think
because no one knows what it is. You need that campaign to sell it, and then people will try the multiplayer.
Well, with Bethesda now behind them pushing this game, the word is going to get out there. I'm confident of that. The quality of Brink is there to see.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be reading about it in our next issue for sure. Yeah.
But again, I would keep stressing that it's Shadowrun. What they're releasing at this point is Shadowrun, and nobody bought that game. And the reason it's Shadowrun is because it's a multiplayer-centric game. No one buys multiplayer-centric games. People buy for the campaign, and then they play the multiplayer. And then they're like, oh shit, the multiplayer is really, really good. Now I'm going to get the next game purely for multiplayer. But you need the first game to have that campaign which draws you in. And if the campaign is like the Quake Wars campaign, which I suspect it will be, which is to say, series of missions, basically deathmatch missions with a bunch of bots on your side, a bunch of bots on their side, and you've got to go and do objectives and so on. That game is going to fall on its ass.
I don't think so. I think because they started off just with the single player, and then people would hop in later on until it was like humans v humans. But even as a single player experience, it looks a lot of fun. There's a lot going on. I mean, even... I honestly believe that it's like a, I mean, we've all seen Borderlands, how the visual style completely changed that around, and everyone's really getting quite excited by Borderlands. Well, Brink, to me, looked like Borderlands, but instead of being an RPS, you know, role-playing shooter, it looks like a Call of Duty version of Borderlands.
Right, so what's the hook? What's the clever trick it does?
Well, I quite like their movement idea, how you can look an area and then like hold a button so they'll move in that direction, leaving you free to obviously shoot people along the way. So it's kind of like Mirror's Edge without having to press the up and the down.
Mm.
So you just hold a button, it will
just look at a point in the distance, hold the trigger or whatever, and you just bolt towards it.
And you go
if there's any
it.
Gaps in the way, he'll jump them. If there's any obstacles in the way, he'll vault them.
Exactly. And you can like tweak that as you go along. So if you're going somewhere and then you think, oh, I'd rather go to that ledge, you look over to that particular ledge and he'll or she will change their movement on the fly to go there. So that's a really neat way of getting around. Because let's face it, platforming in first-person shooters is pretty crap, almost always.
Yeah.
So it allows them to make
Including Mirror's Edge.
Yeah. So it allows them to make more interesting arenas for a start.
Yeah.
So I really like that. And the sub-objective system, I know what you're saying, how it sounds very much like Quake Wars, but it seems much more dynamic than that.
I like the sub-objective system because the only way you're ever going to get people to do anything cooperative online is to make sure there's some benefit to them, the individual.
Yeah.
Let's face it, people are jerks. They get online, they play for themselves. You have a guy up in the mountains sniping away, pop, pop, pop. He's not actually helping the team. He's just racking up kills.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, well sure, he's clearing out. And I know there's going to be loads of people at home who've got sniper in their gamer tag. And they're like, yeah, but I help the team because I'm picking guys off. Yeah, but dude, the guys like doing the groundwork, actually doing, doing the dying,
laying down their lives.
They're the ones who are doing it. It's like if everybody was up in the hills going pop pop pop, nothing would happen.
Yeah.
If everyone was on the field, things would happen. The sniper support is a support class. Maybe one per team, you're doing a nice job. But there's always like six of them. Yeah. If they play any Battlefield game, and you've got like 10 guys standing at spawn, just going pop 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 pop. You need to give some people some sort of selfish reason to go and do stuff. And if you can say to that guy who's sniping up in the hills, oh yeah, mate, if you get actually down in the action and go and capture this point, well, we're going to give you a load of XP and maybe a new gun.
Well, it's like that. It's like, so you bring out the wheel and it's like, oh, you get 50 XP for killing X amount of people. That's fair enough. But if you change yourself to an engineer and you go fix this crane to create a shortcut, we'll give you 300 XP.
So this game's class-based as well.
Yes.
No one's going to buy this game. Nobody is going to play this game. No one plays class-based shooters on console. Nobody. Nobody plays dedicated for multiplayer games on console. Nobody.
I honestly believe
and nobody
Brink
bought Quake
reverse.
Wars.
No. I think Quake Wars looked like ass anyway. It really did.
It was a very good game.
A lot of people were put off by the fact that it looked like ass. It had no marketing behind it.
It didn't have any marketing behind it.
Nobody knew about that game. People are going to know about Brink. They've got one of the biggest emerging publishers behind them now. Bethesda are here and they're here to stay and they're here to throw a lot of money around. I really believe they are now. They want to make an impact, and Brink is a game that's going to make a huge impact.
But who's going to buy it? Just you can say all the advertising in the world, fair enough. Who's this game for?
Shooter fans.
Yeah.
Pure and simple shooter fans.
And they're
fans.
Already playing Halo and Call of Duty.
Maybe. I tell you what, a lot of people are getting annoyed with Modern Warfare 2 with the whole price hike. Mm. Now, still, that game is going to sell millions.
Bear in mind, though, it's just the first of many. All games are going to be that price 3 months from now. All games.
I don't think that would be the case. I think there'll be a bit of a hostile reaction to the price hike.
You may have noticed, if you look at the RRP of the Wii now, that it's $199. Generally speaking, prices are increasing across the board. And
the 360 arcade, is that gone up as well? Because I was away when this news broke.
Well, there's rumours it's going to.
Okay.
It looks like it might. But if you look in your local game retailer, which is probably going to be one of the only chain in the country, then you'll notice that games with an RRP of $49.99 used to retail for $39.99. Now they're retailing for $44.99. Mm. So even if the actual RRP doesn't go up, the prices of games across the board is going up. It's like that's just an unavoidable fact at the moment. It sucks.
Yeah.
Not only are we all getting paid less, not only are we all getting kicked out of jobs, now we're paying more for the one sweet pleasure in our lives. Thanks, world.
Damn you, prices. But thankfully, I mean, we're at a stage now where there are so many good games, so many big games. You don't need a lot of games to last you. I mean, something like Brink.
Well, as we were saying, people are going to get Call of Duty, they're going to play the campaign, and then they're going to play the multiplayer for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, make no mistake, they're going to play it for 2 years. Skip the Treyarch
one, which is going to come, be it Vietnam or wherever.
Yeah.
Because, well, I don't believe that multiplayer will be a patch on
EA have known this for years. They're making their sports games so that if you buy Tiger Woods, you don't need another game. If you only want to play golf on your console, you can buy Tiger Woods and you can play it. And you will not run out of content for a year. And they do weekly tournaments. They do daily tournaments. There's constant challenge for the community. But even if you only played the single player game, you would not run out of stuff to do. It's insane. It's
same
just,
with FIFA and
for
NHL,
me, it's an intimidating amount of content because I'm playing loads of other games. But for the guy who only plays the golf game, he's going to be just made up. A game with FIFA. It's like, you know, you can manage your team. You can run a whole season.
You've got the beer pro mode. And it's the amount of features.
It's almost too much content. And there's plenty of people who are like that, and like, if you're going to hike up the price on any one game, it makes sense to hike it up on Call of Duty Modern Warfare. I don't agree with it. I mean, I don't want it to be hiked up, but you can see why they did it, because for a lot of people, that's the one game they'll buy.
So on the consumer floor for Modern Warfare 2, they had the E3, the demo that we've already seen.
They weren't going letting people go hands-on with anything.
No, behind the scenes, however, again,
this is a game out in less than 2 months.
Yeah, I don't know why they've been so protective. It's a bit silly, really. But behind closed doors, we had a different presentation, which was of the co-op.
Yeah. The little miniature missions, which are... Yeah.
Do you know how long our presentation lasted?
I do know, but I will act surprised when you tell our listeners.
2 minutes, 20 seconds.
2 minutes, 20 seconds.
And he took a long time to finish that level as well. You could do that level in 30 seconds. That was our entire Modern Warfare 2 presentation, something we've already seen before, which was the first co-op level that they unveiled.
The one based on The Rock.
So you got all the guys up and... Yeah.
I like the idea that they're doing these co-op levels based on movies.
Yeah.
Like, I hope they do that with all of them. It's like, I want to be like with a friend, do like the bit where Arnold Schwarzenegger storms the island at the end of Commando, you know? And I want to do like the bit from The Rock. And I want... It's like, the game's been doing this for ages. Yeah. I mean, look at the beginning of Mercenaries where you barrel down the mountain in the truck going through all these huts. That's straight from Bad Boys 2, you know? There's... Just take fun bits from movies and rip them off. I'm cool with that.
The co-op thing looks absolutely fantastic, but it was a terrible, terrible demo in so much that, well, they didn't show us anything new. Plus, the guy who they brought with them didn't work for Infinity Ward. Well, so he turns around and is like, any questions? Put my hand up. Yeah, I've got this. I can't remember what I asked now. It's something to do with co-op, first of all. It's like, I can't answer that. I just work for Activision. It's like, brilliant. Any more questions? Yeah, how about this? No, I don't know. I can't answer
And
that.
After that, all the questions dry up. Everyone's just like,
pfft. Yeah.
There's a funny thing which happens at game press events. Because a lot of games press are bloggers and not professional journalists. I mean, we're not really. We don't work for the Telegraph or anything. But because the guys in the games media are who they are, you get like this part where it's any questions, there's just total silence. Now, that could be for two reasons. One, it could be because of the character of the kind of people who write for the games business, and I think that is a big part of it.
A large part, yeah.
But a much bigger part for me is that I'm not wasting my good questions. I'm going to corner that guy later. I'm going to drag him off later.
That's exactly what I did for Brutal Legend. We went in to see Brutal Legend, and there was about 8 of us or 10 in the room, and I'd already chatted to Tim Schafer's kind of bouncer type guy.
Schafer's a nice guy. Yeah, like
I said, after this presentation, can I have 5 minutes alone with him or 10 minutes? He's like, yeah, absolutely. So any questions? And a few people like ask their questions. I just stay there like dead silent.
And then you were like, when I say 10 minutes alone, I mean just like hug him.
Not for questions.
We'll just sit around in our pajamas and cook
just
s'mores.
A spoon.
Just a spoon, yeah.
And then, everyone filtered out, and then I got to sit down and talk to him about things I really wanted to talk about, but I didn't want Johnny, nomatesblogger.com to put online 5 minutes later.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. You will waste your questions because it'll all be all over the internet.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it. I think my questions are better than most of those. I don't need to, I've been in interviews where it's like 3 of us interviewing some dude, and the question has come up is, how many save blocks does it take up? This is like, in the old days when there were save blocks.
Yeah.
How many save blocks does it take? How much, that wasn't the question I heard. That's a classic question from the archives. The question I heard was, how big, what file size is a DLC? what file size would be the DLC? Like, for like a pack of cards or something, how big would that pack of cards? Who cares? And yet, here's the crazy part. Some blogger put it up online, and they'll get 50 comments all going, oh, that's far too big. Someone else will be like, oh, that's pretty small, actually, because when you think this game had a file size of blah, blah, blah. And that, look, I'm not interested in that. I figure if you're going to talk to a guy who designs games for a living, which if you're lucky enough, you'll get to, you know, or a guy who draw, you know, is the artist and creates this stuff, or is the guy who works on the sound, ask him about how he does his job. Yeah. Ask him about where he gets his ideas from. Ask him where this feature came from.
It's disrespectful if you don't. It wastes their time.
If you need to know how many levels the game's got, you can get that from the PR guy. If you want to know how the game came to be, you know, how a certain feature emerged, how it's like, why did you pick, perfect example, which got picked up by the internet, Matt Castle went and asked the guy on Tatsunoko versus Capcom.
About Phoenix
Wright. Why isn't Phoenix Wright in the game? Yeah. Why didn't you go with Phoenix Wright? And they were like, hey, we tested him. We actually built him.
His objection didn't work as a weapon.
The objection didn't work as a weapon because in Japanese it was a small objection. Yeah, yeah. In English, it was huge. It filled up half the screen. So they had to dump him.
That's like really cool.
That's a great piece of trivia, you know. And that's something you can only get from the guy who made the game.
So, like, chat to Schaefer, chat to Randy Pitchford, who is, like, one of the best guys in the business.
Absolutely,
to talk to.
Very outspoken, very...
So enthusiastic about
absolutely,
the game.
Absolutely, frighteningly so, to be honest. Let's face it. Perhaps a little bit too enthusiastic. It's like, Borderlands is a good game, mate, but it ain't
I'm seriously marked out for Borderlands, but I remember...
I'm really looking forward to Borderlands, but what I would say is that Randy is like... It's like, man, I love Borderlands so much that this game is the greatest game ever made. Like everything Randy hypes up is the greatest thing ever. So when he was promoting Brothers in Arms, he was like, "This is the greatest thing ever."
My favorite, because I've had the pleasure of interviewing Randy a few times in this business. My favorite time was, I think, the first time when it's for Brothers in Arms Hell's Highway. Again, I wasn't overly keen on, to be honest, but I went over to see that a few months before launch, and he was very somber. He was very like, oh, this game is... And then they had the army dude as well, the army guy who...
I remember this, yeah. Colonel John Antal.
Yeah. So they had him like saying, you know, how serious this is.
He's brilliant. He's a great guy.
He's good fun. So Randy's very much like, oh, this is a deeply serious game. We're very respectful. We want to show this is like a horrific place to have been in. These guys really laid down their lives. And then out the corner of his eye, he sees someone playing. He's like, oh my God, dude, you just blew his head off. So it's like, look at his intestines flying through the air.
Yeah.
And it's just like this weird swingometer of like, yeah, this is deadly serious. And holy crap, look at all that
blood
on screen.
What Randy does, and I think with total sincerity, is he's constantly surprised by his own game. Like, he's been working on it for 2-3 years, however long. Well, it's Gearbox. He's been working on it for 8 years. And he shows it off, and someone sits down to play it. And he's like, oh, wow, you just found the weapon, whatever. That's amazing. And he's like, Randy, you've been playing this for the last decade, mate. I mean, that's how long it took to make it. I don't think he puts it on, I think it's totally sincere. Yeah. He really is that excited about his own game.
It's really refreshing to see that, because really I mean, some of the people, I won't name who, but some of the people who I chat to making games, they just felt really burnt out at Gamescom. And
wouldn't you be?
Oh, absolutely. Especially if you're seeing the same demo like for 4 days in a row.
I couldn't imagine being on the other side of the table, to be honest, like working on one game for like 4 years.
Yeah.
Imagine that, you're making one game for 4 years. Like, even Hollywood doesn't do that. You know, it's like, unless it gets stuck in true development hell, you don't get like one script trapped in going on for 4 years. Like, I mean, look, Inglourious Basterds, that film, Tarantino wrote the script ages ago, but the actual movie that was shot, he basically started working on that like last spring.
Yeah.
And like, he turned that around in essentially 18 months. If Tarantino could turn around a movie like that every 18 months, me and Matt Castle were having this conversation, and he said it quite rightly. If he could turn around a movie like that every 18 months, wow. If cinema would just be a better place, you know? Yeah. And wouldn't that be refreshing if you could turn around games that fast, you know?
It would.
If like a designer who's really smart, really talented, could just be like, I'm going to make a game. Oh, wait, well, I've just finished that. I'm going to make another one and another one and another one.
It must be especially depressing if you're trapped in a never-ending cycle of similar games in a series, like a FIFA or an NHL, where all you see is that game. And the difference between
and you finish
09
a game
and 10
got,
is nothing.
And you finish a game and you've got to think, okay, what can we put in next year's one? Oh, well, I think it was Will Wright who said, oh, no, it might have been Warren Spector. I think it was Warren Spector who said, you know, I'm whatever age he was, looking at game development cycles, I've probably got at most 4 games left in me.
Okay.
If I'm making games and I'm investing myself fully into each game, I can make like maybe 4 games in my career. I got to really pick the games I make really carefully from now on. And like, I think it was Warren Spector. And like, that's you just think about that for a second. It's like, maybe if even if you're Cliffy B and you're like early 30s, let's say you turn out a game every 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, in the next decade, you're gonna make 3 games. That, and that's if it's sequels. If it's like the first game in a series, you're gonna make a. You know, it's gonna take you maybe a 4 year development cycle. Like, yeah, you're not making a lot of games in your career.
It must be especially depressing if you know the game you're making isn't good. Because I mean, let's not lie. People will know when they're making a game whether or not it's good.
Yeah.
Like,
there are things you can do to salvage it.
Yeah, but
there are things you can do with a bad game, like that. You know, you can pull it back from the brink. But at the same time, there are some games which are just rotten to the core.
Yeah.
Just rotten to the core.
So it must be so hard to work on especially a bad title for so long, knowing, especially in this current climate, that if your one game that you spend 3 or 4 years on doesn't deliver, that might be it for your studio.
Yeah, there's just your whole studio could go down. And studios have. But then a lot of the studios which went down, I mean, remember, I forget where their name wasn't. It wasn't Radical, it might have been Brash. The studio which did Jumper, not the studio, the publisher which did Jumper, amongst other things. Either they bought up a lot of licenses. One of them was Saw, I believe. One of them was Prison Break. One of them was Jumper. And of course, Prison Break is now with Konami.
Saw's with Konami.
Okay, yes. Prison Break is with
Koch Media.
Koch, okay. So the games eventually got divvied up, but they were a company set up just to work on licenses. Huge money was invested in it.
Yeah.
But no time and the quality was invested in the games. And naturally, you know, you don't bring the quality. You're not going to get any bum buying the games.
That's sad stuff. So what else do we see at Gamescom? Rob's obviously there for the Fable 3 announcement.
Yeah.
Which I'm really excited about. Liked Fable 2. Again, it's obviously a lot of talk.
I'm going to say something vaguely controversial about Lionhead. Lionhead, or like, I mean, Molyneux is like the best ideas man in the business. Yeah. Ideas-wise, he's just a machine. Like, you know, you can sit him in a room and he's like... Do you ever read the transcript between Spielberg and Lucas to talking about Indiana Jones?
I never did.
And it is absolutely fascinating. There's, you know, these guys knocking back and forth ideas about Indiana Jones.
Is this like, Indy 4 or
this is in the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Okay,
just talking about, you know, knocking ideas back and forth. And these young guys, basically, you know, making this movie. So many bad ideas is unbelievable. So many. But then every now and again, they'll come up with a brilliant idea. And they'll be like, and they filter one another out. They'll be like, oh yeah, it could have this. And they're both like, it could have this. Or, and oh yeah, and we can also give him a whip. And they're like, yes! And he's got to have a whip. And he has a whip because of this reason. And then all of a sudden, and that becomes like the iconic image. You know, he's got to have a hat. And it's like, he comes up with all these great ideas. That's, you know... That's Molyneux. He knocks out all these brilliant ideas, and in amongst them is loads of bad ones. And he's his own, you know, harshest critic. Obviously, he knocks out the bad ideas and retains the good ones. Yeah. But I think his ambition is limited by technology, and it always has been. It's like ultimately all of these amazing ideas he has comes, you know, this unstoppable force of his ideas hit this immovable object of technology.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, so this game where you're going to be God and you can do anything, it actually ends up you're just a guy who's in charge of a giant monkey and you can slap him around. And we're going to call it Black and White. And this game where you can become respected by the entire world, and you can meet a woman and you can take her to the mountaintop and you can look out at the sunset together and you can fall in love, is actually just a girl. You know, you go up to a girl, you hit a speech icon, say, come with me. She follows you.
Reflection muscles.
And, yeah. And you call it Fable 2.
Yeah.
And like, I think, like, he's, that's, like, you know, that's that thing. Ambition meets the technology and it all comes crashing down. And one day the technology will exist to put, you know, put his ideas into reality, but it ain't there yet.
Obviously, they're working on Natal with Milo and Kate. The big thing with Fable 3, according to, well, there were two things. One, he said there's something fundamentally wrong with RPGs that has been like there from day one, and he wants to address it with Fable 3. He didn't say what it was. He left that as a puzzle.
Thanks, Molly. Thanks, Pete.
The other thing was, he's really into touching. That could have come out better.
Yeah.
But in Fable 3, you can touch people. And he gave the example, like, if you, like, how powerful it must be to be able to, like, reach out and touch somebody, then hug them and then embrace them. If you go out and you find a house that's on fire and you go inside and there's a little boy that's crying, because obviously his house is burning down and he's scared, he doesn't know what to do. So
oh,
you go in.
Oh, God, Fable 3, Natal compatible confirmed.
And, yeah, and you reach out and then you you try and drag him, but he's resistant. So you have to pick him up and put him over your shoulder and then run out, and then you hug him to calm him down outside. And touching plays such a large part in this world, apparently, that, yes, like you said, Mike, it's got to be Natal, surely. Yeah. Surely you're going to reach out to people. Now, to be honest,
I would be very surprised if from now on Peter Molyneux and Lionhead did anything that wasn't involved with Natal.
I feel a bit stupid hugging air in Natal. It should be interesting. Like, maybe it's not. Maybe they're just going to use right stick or whatever, because they'll still need to move about. So maybe you'll have to have the pad in one hand with the analog stick.
Well, what makes me wonder is the comedy potential of this system. I mean, Fable was really big on comedy.
Yeah.
So can I, like, pick up a little kid?
Throw him.
Hug him, you know, say, it's all right, little man, you'll be all right, you're a little soldier. And then just hold him out at arm's length and just let him go, and you go thud onto the floor, and then just be like, them's the breaks, buddy. You know, some you win, some you lose. And this one, you lost. And then just drop kick him. Like, can I...
Hunt him out.
Yeah, can I do that, you know? When you've got, like, the level of interactivity that Natal can offer...
Yep.
Where do you draw the line on what you can do?
Oh, yeah, I would say no. I bet you can't.
Yeah.
Like he talks about you can be an evil dictator who... Because you have, obviously, a load of gold and you can choose to give that to the poor people or keep it all for yourself. Mm-hmm. And you can be a bad person. I mean, you could be a bad person in Fable 2. I think it would be the same sort of thing.
Were you a bad person in Fable 2?
I wasn't. I tried to be good.
Right. I tried to be as malevolent as I could.
Really?
Well, I figure in the real world, I try to be a good person.
Okay.
To a point. Like, you know, you can make as many jokes as you want at this point about, like, whatever. But generally speaking, you try to be a good person, right? I figure I'm playing a video game. I'm on holiday. I'm on holiday from myself. So I'm going to be an absolute monster. So I played as this chick who started off kind of like, oh, yeah, she's kind of cute. Yeah, she's like kind of, you know, looks ordinary. She ended up as like a 300-pound, blood-red, horn monster of a woman. She looked like if you threw in a wrestling ring, she'd friggin' beat the crap out of Hulk Hogan, you know?
The Big Show, yeah.
Oh, she's horrible. And at that point, I was like, I don't want to play as her anymore. She's horrible.
Well, Mike, you do know that Fable 3 will look at your save file for Fable 2 if you let it.
Oh, so I haven't got a save file anymore.
Oh, I was just saying your kid will take on her traits.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so basically in Fable 3, you play as the kid of the hero in Fable 2, who for the first half, you're setting up a... That was the big campaign with Abe Lincoln and Che and everybody else to start a revolution.
Yeah.
So you start a revolution, overthrow the person on the throne, and then the second half again, you become the king or queen, sorry. And you then, as I say, can choose to like take money from the rich and hand it to the poor, or do whatever you want. You can
you could be one of them communists, one of them reds, or you could be like a total capitalist monster.
See, I know where this is going already for Fable 3. I'm pretty sure I do. Anyway, I think I've got it scoped. He talks a lot about how you'll see injustices in the world, how you see like these people haven't got much money and these other people do. And how, you know, do you want to balance that out? Do you want to hand gold to the people who are poor? But then maybe they're poor for a reason. What effect will that have on the rich? And basically...
So you're basically running a government at this point.
Well, basically, I'm sure what will happen is if you try to be good, you'll end up turning Albion into a communist state.
Yeah.
Basically, if you try to help everybody, you'll turn it into a communist state. If you try to, you know...
You can't please all the people all of the time, so you got
to... If you want to run, like, a good... world, you have to find out, you have to let people suffer, you have to let people, you know, some people be rich and form their wealth and others not. It'll be like Tommy Carchetti in The Wire when he becomes, when people in The Wire try to fix Baltimore, they'll find it's an impossible task.
Yeah.
And in actual fact, all those things that we campaigning against, saying, oh, this is wrong, I need to sort this out, when you've got power, crap, the only way to stay in power, the only way to do good is to be bad in many people's eyes, is to have to tolerate a lot of bad people, a lot of crap, just to let, you know, the majority...
To me, it's just, this game's, the Fable 3 is going to be most interesting just because it'll give us a look into Peter Molyneux's politics and Lionhead's politics. Yeah. I mean, I think his politics are quite clear for anyone who's played his games anyway, but... Like, sometimes you're surprised by the games industry. It's like, I think 1UP.com did a thing last year where they looked at, like, the donations, declared donations by various political parties. And
oh, yes.
Which ones they came from. So, for example, Infinity Ward, were very surprising, because if you look at despite making a very like very war filled aggressive game, Modern Warfare, the first, you know, Call of Duty 4 was actually quite a liberal game. You know, it was very critical of war. And very,
I think Modern Warfare is one of the biggest anti-war games
I've
ever seen.
It's very anti-war, yeah. And of course, they, you know, they donated quite heavily to the Republican Party. There's quite a few people who donated in there. Will Wright is a, you know, quite a famous supporter of the Republican Party, which I wouldn't credit him with either. I would see him more as a liberal. But at the same time, you know, he's a wealthy guy, and so maybe he's, you know, financially he's a more Republican, and yeah, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't like to speculate, but it's an interesting look into the politics of the studio, and maybe it won't be. Maybe in like both those cases, completely deceptive look at the politics. But either way, I think once again I hear that, oh yeah, you're able to run a kingdom and you're able to do all these things, and then I think back to the first game where I was promised I'd be able to, you know, fall in love and, you know, take my lover to a place and she'd look out with me, and I think about all the things that, you know, you could supposedly have done in Fable 2, and I wonder how much of it is just pure artifice and how much of it is just smoke and mirrors.
I think we'll have the same case with Fable 3. I think, like,
how much influence I will actually have on the world, you know,
like I speculated, like, you'll find out whatever you do, it'll always be that one point that's hammered home, like, you can't be the person you want to be. I think it's more going to be a realization of you can be who you want, but every time you try, there are barriers put in your way, and you walk away from the experience saying, oh, actually I couldn't be who I wanted, because that's not the way the world works. So I think it'll be very much like that. And he talks about how Albion's just like one continent in the greater world, so you maybe be able to go to war. So I don't know, it'd be interesting to see how much it's delivered this time. But Fable 2 was a, it may not have capitalised on all the promises, but man, that was a good game.
The way I always looked at it was kind of like the game that Zelda should be these days. If Zelda had kept with the times, it would have become Fable.
I think. Maybe, but not in all the mechanics, but certainly in the world.
I mean, what Nintendo have actually done is basically remake the same game for the last 10 years. I mean, it's a good game, but it's the same game. Whereas Fable sort of took those Zelda mechanics and sort of, you know, sort of adding like a hint of, you know, for want of a better phrase, like the next gen to it.
Other things at Gamescom, very briefly, other quick highlights were Mafia 2, which the way I see Mafia 2 is Grand Theft Auto has spawned many, many, many imitators, but no equals. Some things are like Saints Row 2, for example, it's incredibly fun, but I wouldn't say it's equal to Grand Theft Auto, it's different. GTA has no equals, certainly 4 in terms of just pure quality. Mafia 2 could be the game to equal that. Now that's a big comment to make, and I'm definitely not saying it will, but I'm saying from what we've seen, it could.
It's
more directed.
Well, Rob's been telling us for ages this game's going to be huge.
He's been banging on the right drum. It seems more directed than GTA, like very much more a scripted, guided experience than go out in the world and make your own adventure. But no, I think that's definitely one to get excited for. Come early next year, Mafia 2 is going to be up there with those other big names that have been held back from the end of this year. Got to play a bit of Bad Company 2. Got some interesting stories for Bad Company 2, which will be in the next issue. Mostly revolving out around how their Destruction 2.0 is really Destruction 2.0.
Oh no, he did it, he said it.
Dante's Inferno, I was quite into, to be honest. It's a, man, what a controversial game that's going to be when that comes out. That's going to offend and upset a lot of people.
I know.
Really bad. Like, I asked the guy, obviously, for people who aren't aware,
go through the 9 circles. They're almost disappointed that it's not offended anyone yet.
They organised that fake
protest in E3. This game exists purely to piss people off. Like, make no mistake, you can say, oh yeah, it's a good game. You can say whatever you want. It doesn't exist to be a good game. It exists to piss people off.
Well,
like, that's why this game exists. They are planning on selling on controversy. They want it on the front page of the Mail, and they want it to shift millions of copies off the back of all of the pent-up rage it's going
to
create.
Well, it seems like a very, very competent God of War clone to me. I love the world. I really think it's an interesting place to be in. But when you're in Limbo and you're fighting the unbaptized babies, that is very disturbing. And like, not in a, oh, I'm freaked out kind of way, in a really, actually, I don't know if I want to be playing this particular bit kind of way. It's very, it's not even on the line. It's way beyond the line. It's so much, it's untrue.
I mean, you're going to go through all these seven circles of hell where you're going to meet all these different types of people. So you know at later stages you're going to be going to like places where I wonder how they're going to like be. I mean, bear in mind it's a very old version of like a very old interpretation of the Bible. So you're going to get to the part where it's like the sodomites and the whores, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh no, they're...
Well, lust is more puzzly. Lust is more puzzle-based.
Right.
They didn't really go into much detail about that.
The crazy thing is, like, when this game gets released in America in particular, yeah. there'll be a lot of fuss over the slicing up of the babies.
Yeah.
Sure. But the biggest controversy over there will be the boobies.
The sex, yeah.
Boobs and sex. That's always the problem. Remember Peter Molyneux, like, I've been doing a little feature lately, which people will see in a forthcoming issue, looking up some things that Peter Molyneux said in the past. Someone asked him about, you know, sex in Fable. He said, why is the sex, you know, why does the sex pan away? And he said, to be honest, it's you Americans' fault. It's you Americans. He said, you can shoot all the people in the world, but yeah. as soon as you see a pair of boobs on screen, you guys freak out.
The old Fox News Mass Effect debacle.
Yeah. It's just crazy. That's what's going to cause some trouble. But everything about this game is controversy magnet. Everything about it. Every level, there's something to be offended at.
Yeah. But that's the point of it.
Yeah, that is the point.
That is totally the point. And I don't know, I think maybe they'll balance it off by trying to say, well, you know, we've got this righteousness system where you meet these people and you can judge them. You can either punish them for the sins or you can absolve them. And like, really, it's just a mechanic to either get unholy points or holy points.
Yeah, it's just yes or no.
That's going to placate nobody. You know,
I'm sick of this in games as well. Yeah, it's like yes points and no points. Oh, I just earned 60 yes points because I saved that guy. Oh, well, I killed this dude, so that earned me 30 no points. That's what passes for a morality system.
Yeah.
No. That isn't any kind of morality system. It's just when you're dealing with just this big morality swingometer, it's not any kind of fair aggregator.
No. So, but that's their plans for it, for a morality system.
Oh God!
And
I give that game 14 no points.
A couple of other things, very very quickly that I saw: Aliens versus Predator. We saw the Alien campaign.
Yeah.
I'll be talking about it in a forthcoming issue, but much more impressive than the Predator campaign.
Right.
Very pleasantly surprised.
How can that be?
I don't know. Well, I mean,
as a Predator, you've got the most badass weapons in the world.
Well, the Alien
right?
campaign is very stealthy, and it feels like Chronicles of Riddick, but with lots of good movement. Yeah. So you can hop in and out of vents and stuff, and sneak up behind people. Yeah, so it seems like Riddick, but with more freedom in
when you're an alien, there's no up and there's no down, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, you can run on the walls. You've got a really nice system for hopping into small holes and out of it to surprise people. You run in to like electric currents knocking off the power so the lights go down, and then the Marines is trying to search you with torchlight.
Mm.
Very stealthy and very quite cool. Other things we played very quickly, Ruse is one that I'm quite excited about.
I called this one a while back. I think Ruse looks very clever.
Yeah,
very very
in the
clever
same
strategy.
Way that End War was a very nice strategy game. Ruse is a completely different game.
Mm.
But again, really good fun to play.
I think PC is the place to play it though.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Oh, absolutely. No question. It works with a pad. It works 10 times better with mouse and keyboard.
Yeah.
And Lego Indiana Jones 2. I had a quick go on that because there's a full level editor. At the moment, they're wondering how they're going to get around the sharing online. They want to, but what they don't want is Michael Gapper to make a level of giant cocks and make it available for the little kids who want to play.
Which sprit Lego blocks.
So that'll be interesting to see how they get around it. And that's just a taster of what we saw at Gamescom. We saw a lot more besides.
Well, you were there when Far Cry 2 came in. What was the first thing we built in the editor?
Don't paint me with this brush, Mike.
Don't even start on me, pal. You were laughing alongside, you were yucking it up alongside Penis Island. You took a stroll around Penis Island with me. And I think it's fair to say we both had a good time at Penis Island.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Set a light to the trees there.
Yeah.
The forest of Penis Island.
Yeah, the forest at the base of Penis Island. God.
That's all your fault, mate.
Yeah, that's enough of Cologne anyway. How was Germany anyway?
It was very nice. It was a really, really nice city. Lovely cathedral.
That's because you went to Leipzig. Did you have to share a room with two sweaty men?
I did have to share a room with someone I'd never met before, but only for half the time.
Who was it?
Someone in our ads department.
Someone in marketing?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, but only for half the time because he had to go later.
We're kind of duplicating something we were talking about on the Magcast the other day, the old the DVD exclusive podcast that we do now.
Okay.
Remember, folks, if you pick up the new magazine, you will get an exclusive podcast. It's actually far long. We always plan for it to be short, but it's actually pretty long these days. It always is. I mean, it always seems to come in at like a good 45 minutes, I think.
Oh, were you that long?
The second I don't know,
one was
maybe.
Only 10 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. But it always comes in, like, it seems to weigh in like a decent, it's certainly content heavy at the very least. And we talked about on the one which is going to be an issue, I think 85, I want to say 85.
84.
The one we recorded the other day.
84. That'll be for issue 84.
84 is already on stands, though.
No, 83. No, 83
is on stands. 84 is coming. And then 85 is what we recorded the other day, me, Rob.
No, that's 84. Trust me, Mike.
This confuses us as well, folks. whatever it is, we did that. We talked about like trips to like press trips and so on in a way that we can only talk about on a 15 rated podcast because this one's available to the world, but not on iTunes. What's the story with that? Because I think a lot of people have been asking about our iTunes problems.
iTunes is being fixed.
Let me tell you something, my friend. You don't use iTunes, so you don't know this. But if me, I'm an iTunes user.
I use iTunes.
I get my podcast through iTunes.
I use iTunes.
I wouldn't even dream of listening to a podcast that wasn't on iTunes. I wouldn't even dream of it because it's just so easy.
It is. Being it is important. It's this month.
Excellent. There
and
you go.
At the very end of the month. So
let me see what we've done month. For our readers in this last month. We've got subscriptions coming.
We have.
And let me tell you, my friends, that was an uphill battle.
And that was just because of you readers and listeners.
Subs. Yeah. See, imagine if you will in your head right now, like me and Matt and Tim and
that's
Rob.
Good. That's good imagining.
Oh, can you just see us there? We're all standing there, and behind us. There are a bunch of guys, and they're all wearing blue. And they say to this guy, who's the boss, and you say to that guy, you say, "Hey, boss, we've got a bunch of guys here who love wearing blue, and they want to get blue shirts sent to them in the post." And the guy's like, "Don't know. It doesn't look to me like they like wearing blue enough. I don't think they like wearing blue." But over on the other side, there's a bunch of guys wearing red. There's a different magazine team. I don't know. Say. Just a different bunch of guys, and they're like, "Hey guys, we like wearing red. Can these guys we like wearing red get free get shirts sent out to them every month?" Like, "Yeah, no problem, man. Red shirts. Wow, there's and meanwhile the blue guys are like, "But there's at least as many of us blue guys as the red guys. Why can't we get blue shirts?" And the guy's like, "Oh, no, I don't think the blue guys want it so much," and that goes on for 2 years, and then you go to the boss, like you say to the boss man, you say, "Oh man, why can't we get blue shirts for these guys?" And the boss is like, "I don't know. Oh, let's give them some blue shirts."
Yeah.
You're like, what we've been doing the last 2 years has been, look at us. We're always standing here waiting for more blue shirts.
We've been demanding blue shirts for a long time.
That's kind of basically the what happened to get subscriptions.
A bit simplified, but yes. It was lots of messages that people wanted blue shirts as well.
Yeah.
As a disclaimer, we're not sending anybody blue shirts.
No.
So do not write to us saying where's our blue shirts with our mag when we subscribe.
No. You just no sending shirts. Copies of the magazine. Only the magazine. But I would imagine cheaper.
Yeah.
Cheaper than you find it on shelves and earlier. Because we get our copies in about a week before they hit stands.
Yep.
That means you'll get your copies probably the same time before. That, my friend, is a good deal.
It's good.
Especially since the magazine has never rocked harder than it rocks right now.
So what else has happened when Oh, I know what we should talk about very quickly on Gamescom front. Gamescom tat.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be giving away the tat we got some point in the mag.
We're giving away various... We're always giving away tat. For our people on the Letters page, we're always giving tat. But there was one piece of tat I'm not going to be giving away. And that's the Mass Effect shirt that Matt picked up at King Cologne. It is the all-time worst T-shirt anyone's ever had at any press event ever.
Basically, the only tat we got pretty much was t-shirts. We got a Dark Void model and an inflatable Dragon Age Origins,
which has already been inflated and used to batter people around the office.
But we just got a few t-shirts, including a GTA Gay Tony t-shirt, who nobody in their sane mind would wear outside.
You could be the gayest man in the country, and you still would look at that t-shirt. You're like, "Nah, I don't know. It's not for me, to be honest." Because this t-shirt is just... It's just a logo, basically.
Yeah.
It's not a great-looking t-shirt.
But why would
t-shirt.
You wear just that logo? But the Mass Effect...
If it were... What I would like for a Gay Tony t-shirt, and I would wear this, the campest... It's like the most beautiful airbrushed piece of ultra-camp art. Rainbows, you name it. And I would walk in the office wearing that with pride.
That. Yeah, definitely. That'd be really cool. Not just the logo. Go on, do the job on the Mass Effect t-shirt. Tell
the Mass Effect,
so
okay, it's bad in every possible way a t-shirt can be bad. For starters, it's got the piece of Mass Effect art with Shepard running towards the camera, looking very, very like the imaginary camera, looking very, very angry. You might have seen it on the cover of a couple of magazines. Like one of our competitors had it on the cover. I won't mention her name, but it begins with games, ends with TM. They had it on the cover, and it's that piece of art. It's quite a striking piece of art, right?
Yeah.
But... it's what a disgraceful thing to put on a t-shirt. It's like, oh yeah, Mass Effect. Because remember for the first Mass Effect, they just had these really cool t-shirts, which were actually the uniforms of the guys.
Very stylish.
Like, just kind of, it's just like the N7 thing.
And that's what the devs had at the show.
Yeah.
So I thought, yeah, I'll take one of them shirts.
Yeah, that's not a bad shirt. Like, you wouldn't wear it. Maybe you would. But, because Pellet will wear the freebies which come in, I will not. This body is not for sale. So, but particularly not in the Mass Effect t-shirt, because look, I'm sure the game's going to be great. But an angry, shaven-headed man running out of my chest with the giant, a truly gigantic Mass Effect 2 logo on it.
Yeah.
And the absolute worst print quality I've ever seen on any t-shirt ever. And on the shirt, Shepard's basically a bold shade of Rob Taylor orange. And the middle of his face is a big black stripe because he just blended into the background of this black t-shirt. It's got the Mass Effect 2 logo. If it were on the side of a hot air balloon, you could see it. It's so huge. But oddly, the image is just still like focused right in the center of the shirt. So there's nothing below your... It's not like... It's like a classy piece of art, which is... It's just, so I figure we're not going to...
It's a horrendous t-shirt.
It is the all-time worst. Because we got a bunch of Red Faction t-shirts, which is kind of nice. It's got all the logos of the different companies in the game. You would never know it's a Red Faction t-shirt. You could wear that down the road. You wouldn't look bad. This, if you wore this down the road, you would get beaten up. And you know what? You deserve it. So I'm not going to send it out to anyone. That t-shirt is not going to be sent out to anyone. It will be. I'm going to burn it. I'm going to go back to the office right now and I'm going to burn it.
Say a prayer while you burn it to make sure that it doesn't come back with a vengeance.
Yeah, yeah. Because that Shepard on that t-shirt, man, I would not want to piss him off. Not when he's that orange. He's raging.
Did you have good tat at Leipzig last year?
No. Got a big orange, a big silver Sega bag, which I used to carry home the other pieces of swag. But swag-wise, it wasn't good. You got sweets. We didn't get any sweets. Because you got some Pez sweets, right?
Yeah.
In the shape of footballs.
Half footballs. Yeah. They were all right, weren't they?
They were all right, but it was a small packet. It's like a giant packet, four sweets.
Five sweets, I think.
Five sweets.
Yeah.
Five sweets in a packet that you could have put the rest of the swag in.
You could have slept under it. It's like a duvet.
Yeah.
I should have used it for a duvet when I was there.
Yeah. If you actually stayed in a nice hotel. If you stayed in the hotel that I stayed in last year, you would actually have considered it. Just to keep yourself off of the sheets, which, as I say, had blood on. I told you, the sheets at the hotel I saw last year was blood. And here's the thing. It was at the edge of the bed where someone might have sat. So let me tell you, that blood wasn't no cut finger.
Oh, don't, Mike.
That blood was not from any cut finger. All I'm saying is that it was...
Yeah, no more. Anyway, moving on. So we finished an issue a couple of weeks ago, which is out... 7th?
Oh, I don't know. It's confusing. It's hard. It's early in the morning as well.
It's out on the 7th, I'm telling you.
All right.
It's so the 7th of September.
With that in mind, if you want to read the ODST feature, you need to get there quick. Because we dished out that issue late, but our next issue is still coming on time.
Yeah.
Still coming on schedule. So it's not on shelves for a long time. Go get the ODST issue right now. Because let me tell you, my friends, there's some strong facts about ODST. What? Cut that.
I'm keeping that in, Mike. Go on, carry on.
All right. No, I've got nothing to say.
Nothing?
Nothing at all.
That's a good contribution.
Hey!
But on 7th, we've got the world exclusive hands-on with Gay Tony.
Yes. And quite a lot of people are looking forward to that. We've actually heard from people saying, oh, what's it like? We're like, you have to wait.
There's some very interesting things, some things you would not expect from Grand Theft Auto 4 in that. That Rob uncovered with his hands on. We won't say anything more. We'll leave that little treat for you guys to discover on the 7th.
What we will say, to tease it, I think we'll be all right in saying this. They've put some of the fun back in. Some of the little fun things that you might have liked about the old games. It's back in.
That's it. No more.
No more. No more than that.
No more spoilers.
But, there's things that fans of the older games will really like.
Yeah, so we've got that, and we've got a few good reviews. We've got Dirt 2 came in. It was fantastic.
Oh, IL2, Dirt 2 is a good game. Yeah,
Sturmovik's a good game. And a few other Shaq games as well.
Yes.
Yeah, one in particular.
More than our share of crap games.
And it's been so long since we worked on that issue, I've kind of forgotten. Oh, we've got the first part of a big hydrophobia feature as well.
Yeah.
Now, that's a game a lot of you might be scratching your heads thinking, what was that? What?
Hydronobia.
About 2.5 years ago, Xbox World 360, before my time, in fact, had the very, very first look at a game called Hydrophobia being made up in Manchester.
By the guys who make the snooker games.
Yeah. So a lot of people are like, oh, why would I be interested in that? Well, it's coming to Xbox Live Arcade this Christmas. And it's, well, whew.
It's episodic, right?
It's episodic. So part one's coming this Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? That's worth really looking forward to, guys.
Yeah.
So
nice little surprise. We wouldn't ordinarily give it so much coverage, you know?
No.
Live Arcade game, we'd probably cover it in the community section. But we're like, you know what? This is a game which people need to see.
Yeah.
They need to notice this.
We played it we didn't play it all the way through, but we saw it all the way through and we played a lot of that.
As much as anything, yeah. We want to support the guys behind it. It's like, there are guys who've been making, you know, these snooker games and so on for a long time. I bet they got to be pretty bored with rolling balls around by now. Like, even if they're the biggest fan of snooker in the world, which I would imagine they are, they got to be like, you know what? Balls, bays, pool cues, snooker cues.
You can only take it so far.
I've had it up to here with all that. So they've made this game, which is like, you know, kind of a project, which is a dream project, basically. They were like, let's go make this, just do it and see if we get a publisher. Guess what? They didn't get one. So they're going to publish it themselves. And to me, this looks like a game where an EA or a Bethesda or an Activision are going to see it and go, we need to get these guys on something with a huge budget right away. That's the thing. It's kind of a smallish budget game, right?
Yep. Well, yeah, but it doesn't feel like too small a budget.
No.
All I'll say to tease it is this. It feels like an Xbox Live Arcade version of, it's very important to add that caveat at the start, Dead Space meets Tomb Raider with a lot of water.
On a boat.
Yeah, so it feels like a boat version of Ishimura. The movement and stuff is a bit Tomb Raider-y, and there's a lot of water knocking about, making it a bit Bioshock-y in a way, but purely in the fact that it's wet, not so much as like the story. And yeah, that's all I'll say, but that's coming in that issue as well. So that's one to look out for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that game is to me, it's like a game that you sell the studio on, you know? It's a game you use proof of concept. You say, look at what we did on our own. Now give us a load of money and shit. Now take a look at what we'll do.
And they might do well.
Yeah.
They might do well.
I hope so.
Should we have a few questions before we wrap up?
Oh, let's have a few questions then.
Andy Silve wants to know, if you guys had to create a game starring the Xbox World team, what would it be? I propose a sandbox GTA-style crime thriller set in the West Country.
I don't have an answer.
No?
No.
Flying
game. There you go.
A flying game.
Fighting game.
Oh, fighting game.
Flying. Sorry. None of us can fly.
I was going to say. That makes no sense.
No, it makes no sense at all. No, fighting game. Beat 'em up.
I'd suggest, because I kind of walked in a bit of a daze this morning, hence my 24 energy drink. I propose a Flower, Sun and Rain type point-and-clicky style Groundhog Day adventure where we come into the office every day doing the kind of the same thing, but every day it's slightly different. Something wackier goes on. Maybe Tim's crazy jokes come to life or something.
I can't beat that answer. My idea is just a fighting game where I get to kick you in the nads over and over and over. And my fatality is kicking you in the nads.
Why me?
And my ultra combo is kicking you in the nads.
Your brutality is putting on your Mass Effect t-shirt and burning my eyes out.
No, it's putting on the Mass Effect t-shirt and then kicking you in the nads.
Skunk Plush wants to know, we and other games mags in general talk about third-party games and first-party games. First-party being those published by Microsoft, made by Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo, etc.
Yeah.
What would be a second-party game? A second party game is basically
it's a made up term, let's be honest. It's not
I think they're all like journalistic terms that
have
been made up.
Yeah, I mean the thing is like there's no true second party is kind of ambiguous term is the thing.
Yeah.
Like third party is concrete, first party is concrete, but second party is kind of ambiguous.
I think it's generally accepted to be what would be a third party developer making games solely for
often with the licenses
for contractual reasons.
Retro are a perfect example with Nintendo.
Or you've got are Retro a third party or are they own? Because you have to if company has like more Nintendo than 50% stake.
Yeah. So Rare would have been back in the day as well.
Rare would have been. Silicon Knights would have been.
Yeah.
You got like Game Freak and HowlLab, who do like Pokemon and Smash Brothers respectively. They're not owned by Nintendo, but they just make games pretty much solely for Nintendo.
Yeah.
So there you go. So right now, I guess bizarre would have been for a few years for Microsoft.
Yeah, because they still were able to make games for other people. They made the club for Sega.
So I think Bizarre would have classed as a second party. Not anymore though. Now,
no.
Cornetica wants to know where do we think the next Far Cry game should be based? Far Cry 1.
Can I have that sheet of paper, please, Matt?
No.
Can I please have that sheet of paper?
No, you can't.
Can I have that sheet of paper?
Far Cry 1 was in Ireland. Far Cry 2 was in Africa. Where would we like the next game to be set?
I'd like it to be set on that sheet of paper so I can read it myself.
No, you're not. I'd like to see it in the Amazon with deadly creatures in it for a change. So you got like the crocodiles and stuff and anacondas. And you're fighting a roving band of deadly tree loggers who have picked up machine guns. That's what I want to see.
Don't know, I'm not a game designer.
No.
I don't think it's my place to say.
The Amazon rainforest.
I don't think it's my place to say.
As it's being deforested.
Well, the minute someone gives me a big check and says, make Far Cry 3, I'll be like, I've got all these ideas. But until then, it's not my place to say. Clint Hocking is going to do a marvelous job no matter what.
I'm sure he will. I mean, we're both big fans of Far Cry 2. Not everybody in the industry is, but I think...
Yeah, I think the problems are glaring. The problems are obvious to anyone who's ever played a game.
The setting wasn't a problem. The setting was gorgeous.
The setting was perfect. I mean... They could set it in the same place. They could set it on the same map.
Yeah.
Fix all of my problems with the game, and I would buy it again.
Yeah. I think I'm with you there. Final question comes from Marvelous G. He wants to know, how successful do we believe the new Games on Demand initiative will be? Do we, when we consider the price of larger hard drives and how many more premium and core units are in the home than elites?
Forget the price of larger hard drives. Look at the price of the games.
Exactly.
Jesus, I mean, you can pick up a copy of Sega Rally at GameStation for £4.
I think that's exactly what I'm feeling. Games on Demand, from my cynical viewpoint, is just a way for Microsoft to control the pricing of these titles.
Games on Demand works fine if they release day and date with other games. If the day Alan Wake comes out, I could go to the shops and buy it or download it, like I preload it the way you do with Steam the night before, and at midnight I can just go and play.
Yeah.
That is, that's something worth paying for. But otherwise, I would much rather have it on the disc, to be honest. I mean, I'm fully behind digital downloads. I think everything is going to be digital a couple of years from now. I'm absolutely certain the future is one big box with everything on it. I don't want discs. They just clutter up my shelves. They take up a load of space. I don't want them. I mean, I just don't like physical media. Mm-hmm. At the same time, as long as physical media is cheaper than the digital equivalent, which it should never be.
No.
I mean, you've got to make a box. You've got to make a manual. You have to burn the disc. It's a lot.
You have to costs.
Ship it, and you got the cut for the retailers. It shouldn't be more expensive.
No. If it were cheaper, then it would be great. I don't know how your situation is with your hard drive, but I've got a 120-gig hard drive. I'm down to about 10 gig.
No, so, I'm not. Honest, that, I'm not that.
I can't really.
I'm not that light on storage space, but I mean, yeah, you need a bigger hard drive at this point. If they're going to go purely digital with the next through Xbox, which I think they should, 2015 we'll say. They need a terabyte at least. I mean, they need 1,000 gig at least. I mean, I've got that on my media system. I've got 2,000 gig on my media system at home,
mm-hmm.
and I'm filling it up, with HD movies and so on.
Yeah.
With a 1080p movie is, you're talking like 12 gig conservative.
It's crazy,
And they're talking about streaming 720p videos and so on in the future. And yeah, I know you're not supposed to keep those videos and so on, but. People's collections that they like to keep are eventually going to become collections that exist in purely digital form. You need more storage. 120 gig isn't enough. And the markup you put on your 120 gig drive is unfair.
Yep.
It's far too expensive. So that's expensive. The games are expensive. The movies are expensive. There needs to be a bit of give and take here, guys. You need to...
It's a good idea in principle, but they haven't really delivered so far. They haven't thought about...
Look at what Valve are doing. Copy it. Yep. Do what Valve are doing with Steam. With only one exception I can think of, which is the day Total War came out and that game was coming out at like 1 KBS, I think. It took me forever to get it. It took me like an entire day to get the game, but it's the only time Steam's ever let me down. Otherwise, it's been brilliant. I mean, that's because they didn't preload.
Yeah.
If you offer preloading, well, maybe if everyone has to download it on day one, obviously the servers are going to fall on their arse, but if everyone's downloading it for a month, and they're, everyone activates it on day one.
While the retail goes to gold and gets printed. There's no reason why they can't.
And that's the way it should be. I mean, that's the showpiece game for that should have been ODST.
Yeah.
should have been ODST, and I suspect it'll be Alan Wake.
The fact that games aren't even going to be available on the first day that they're out on shelves.
I think Alan Wake could be the first that does that.
It's just crazy. For me, as I say, I know we have different reasons why we're both a bit reluctant to go games on demand at the moment. For me, it's just the price control. I really do think, like,
yeah,
on day one or whenever like it's out, first day of games on demand, I can buy it cheaper from Amazon or somewhere else.
Yeah, remember that in a digital future that one person's going to be controlling the prices, you know. There's not going to be any competition. On an Xbox, yeah, Microsoft set the prices. That's just the way it's going to be. I mean, there's going to be no competition at that point. But for the time being, we do have a choice. And I urge everyone to exercise that choice. If you want to play Sega Rally, it's probably going to take you on British internet connections. It'll probably take you as long to get on a bus to your local game station, pick up a copy for £5 as it would to download it.
For 20? Yeah. Is it 20?
20 quid, £19.99.
And hopefully when they realise that that's what people are doing, they'll adjust their system to offer a more competitive...
Here's the crazy thing. If they, for example, Chromehounds, the servers are being shut down later this in early 2010. You know what? Chromehounds was a pretty good game. It was a very niche game, but it's a pretty good game. Yeah. You release that game on Games on Demand for £4. That game would come back in a big way.
Yeah.
And you're not making any money off of it now, so why not? Put it on Games on Demand for £4. Undercut everyone. For £4, I think, I'll try that.
Yeah.
I'll give it a go.
It's the price of a meal from McDonald's.
Yeah, a meal from McDonald's.
It is. So, it's not the price of a meal from Garfunkel's, is it?
With his Lunchables. What you got for dinner today, Matt?
I've got a lunch and meat sandwich.
Because your lunchbox resembles... Always now, a child.
I take offence to that today because today Hoodie, our art head, who's like mid-30s, I'm not sure exactly how old he is.
Oh, you're saying Hoodie's old now? Oh, he's old.
Comparatively. He brought a cheese string in today.
He's a senior citizen.
Hoodie's got a cheese string today. I don't have a cheese string. I haven't had one for about 2 months. And yet I'm the one who gets accused of having the kids' lunch.
I saw you walking along doing a cheese string wrap.
I don't even know what the cheese string
is. You only have it
when
he goes, cheese string. So I don't know how it goes, but you know how it goes. You should sing it, because I saw you singing it.
With my Mass Effect 2 t-shirt on.
Yeah, wearing your Mass Effect 2 t-shirt. You look fucking good, though.
And with that, I think we're going to wrap up the podcast, guys.
Bye-bye, everybody. Yeah, so pick up the ODST issue quick, because it's not going to be on shelves much longer, and we're hearing this like selling out all across the board, because like it's the only place in the world where you hear about ODST. And it's not the old, it's not the same thing. Stuff is up online. It's not just the firefight stuff.
It's hands on with the campaign.
Yeah, it's the campaign and a good half of the campaign. I will warn you, if you don't like spoilers, there are a few spoilers in there, but not in the main body text. Just avoid the box text. You'll be fine. Enjoy the issue. I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we'll see you next time on the Xbox World Show
in 2 weeks' time.
In 2 weeks' time. Bye-bye.
Bye.